you are not your trading. You are not your car. You are not your house, as much as people get caught up in that bullshit. And that's part of why traders have so much problem. You identify with, you know, outcomes and identify with success or failure or whatever. The more you get trained and you become a practitioner of mindfulness, you become a practitioner of self-awareness, you can just see that stuff going by.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address. Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Trading Endgame, our new mini-series with Sound Performance Psychology's Sean Sawyer. It's leveling up our emotional maturity. Last time we met, we covered fear, and while it doesn't really matter, I think if you listen to him out of order, I know Sean did put a lot of thought into that, so it might be best if you try catching up on that fear episode before you listen to tonight's deep dive into greed. Now, before we get started, quick reminder to everyone that can listen to these recordings live in Sean's private but free Discord. And thank you guys listening in live tonight. If you have questions, please post them as you think of them, and we'll make sure that they get answered before we cut cameras. And if you enjoyed tonight's conversation and are greedy for more, make sure you visit soundperformancepsychology.com, especially because there is still time to register for August's workshop. Is that right, Sean?
Yes, sir. That is correct. August 4th, we start Monday, 15 minutes after the bell.
And if anybody has any questions about what's getting covered in that workshop, there's a link that I'll have in the episode description, so people check that out. And there's also the episode that we recorded, was that a couple months ago?
Yeah, I think so.
I think did a pretty good dive into what gets covered in those. So I think we've got the promotional stuff out of the way. Maybe we should just kind of jump in and see where you want to take it tonight.
The very first thing that pops in my mind when I think about greed and the current state of trading psychology is that it pretty much universally demoralizes greed, like says it's a bad thing. But Gordon Gekko is right. Greed is good. And there's really not any getting rid of it because it's been programmed into us for 200,000 years. So you can get that out of your head. But there is a way to work with it that can make it less problematic for your trading.
So I mean, I think that's one of the main ideas of last time's discussion on fear was talking through some of like the benefits of it. So maybe that's a good place to start with. Like, what are some of the benefits of greed? Why is it helpful in our everyday lives?
Well, it is why you and your parents and your children are alive, because it's one of three evolutionary characteristics that were key in our survival for less. About 200,000 years, however long the hunter-gatherer stage lasted. And, you know, greed in that context was things like, you know, tools, children, you know, taking stuff from the other village.
Resources.
Resources. You needed to be greedy about that, because you were mobile. You know, you were, what's the word I'm looking for?
Nomadic,
thank you. Jeez.
So at what point, or how much did greed play into, like, I guess maybe the transition from hunter-gatherer to like city-states or like farming societies? Like, was that a mindset of like greed, like wanting to be more prepared for the future?
Man, that's a big question. It's a little sociological, a little anthropological, I guess. But my educated guess, I'd like to think, is that that's where you started to see the problems arise with, you know, like the haves and the have-nots, with indentured servitude, with whatever.
Maybe like the class system in general?
Yeah. Almost. Yeah. Feudalism, you know, like you had the landlord, like that's such a common word we use now, but think about what that says. The lord of the land. I mean, it's a insane word. It's kind of insane that we still use it. Like my landlord. It's a pretty big word. And I think, you know, and guess who came up with that word? The people that owned the stuff, the people that whose greed was very strong, and they did the things you got to do to get stuff.
Are you really going to pay the guy if he called himself the land peasant? I mean, you want to make sure that you're getting your bills paid every
That's
day.
That's an excellent point, sir. That's an excellent point. But yeah, I mean, I think it just started then. You saw the separation, you saw the problems start to begin where there's haves and have nots, people upset about it, or people exploiting and taking advantage of other people. And then of course, in American history, we have the, you know, Ma Bell and, you know, the antitrust, you know, we have, Carnegie and, you know, the railroad barons and oil and all that stuff that had to be broken up because, you know, these guys were the first ones that you saw these wild manifestations of greed, and that kind of has trickled down and left its imprint. But that's a anomalous type of greed.
Right.
There aren't a lot of Carnegies. There aren't a lot of billionaires.
But I mean, if we look at like the need of like OSHA arising, the way it did, I mean, that was well after the Carnegies. That was
absolutely
like practices that continued into the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. I mean, if companies are incentivized to make money, not necessarily to make safe money, right?
Correct.
So I think that's where greed kind of gets maybe a bad reputation, as we see it and we liken it to like the Andrew Carnegies and those types. And we've seen some of the downsides of it.
Yeah. Now you have what they call artisanal mining, which is a nice phrase for poor people mine with no tools, no equipment, children on their back, because we want cobalt, and everyone out there, every big company needs cobalt, you know, so we're still doing it. But again, it's outlier behavior. It's not the everyday. It's not like everyone is run by that, dominantly, but it is a factor for all of us. We all have greed. You know, greed is why you don't give your money away.
Mm-hmm.
And put, you know, and go to the context of trading. You've got the Gordon Gekko, greed is good. You can't go into trading and, you know, be Captain Nice Guy. It doesn't really work.
What's the opposite of greed? Yeah. Altruistic. I don't know.
That altruism. Works. You know, you could be altruistic outside of trading.
Right.
But, you know, what are you going to do? Oh, no, I've gotten too much profit. Let me let this profit go down so I can spread the wealth. You know, I mean, if you do, give me a ring because that's a problem. But.
I want to know when you're trading.
Yeah, exactly. But obviously we don't do that, and that's functional. And, you know, there's limits. Greed helps us set boundaries and say no and things like that, because we need our stuff, or we want our stuff, or, and we have worked for it or earned it, or it's necessity for living. And the problem is with trading, it's, people like to talk about dopamine a lot these days. That's part of greed, you know, wanting. Is dopamine just as much as, you know, chasing profits or getting all excited and fantasizing about, you know, what you're going to do with the money you've earned or whatever.
Getting ready to take the screenshot before it hits your target.
Exactly. Exactly. One of my most important rules is when I have an urge for take a screenshot that I cut my trade, because
that's it is
the top rule. Like it proved itself so many times in my career. Really, I mean,
that's an idea I want to touch back on. Maybe we get to the Q&A, but sure, the idea of greed as an indicator is something that I've been exploring recently.
Yeah, that's good. Good, because I want to go down that path a bit, because one of the complications with greed, similar to fear, but actually worse, is that greed isn't really, okay, you could argue it's an emotion, it has an emotional component, but greed is, it's in our breath, it's in our heartbeat, it is visceral. You can't just experience greed and like it's you know, regular old anxiety and expect to manage it the same way. It's much more sinister. It's subtle, but it's strong. And, you know, it's in your cells. It's like, you know, those people have, you know, you have an urge. They call it an action urge. You know, you want to take that trade. You want to size up. You want to, you know, go all in on some zero DTE nonsense or whatever it is. That isn't just your brain and its thoughts. Now, that's a factor and that's an issue to work on and, you know, something to diffuse yourself from. But, you know, it's baked in for 200,000 years. You're not just going to be like, meh, screw you, greed. I'm like, you have to know greed. You just said greed is an indicator. That's a great way to put it. And you have to understand what greed feels like inside your skin. And when I say inside your skin, I'm talking about what they refer to as private language, which is thoughts, feelings, urges, sensations, and emotions. Mm-hmm. You have to know what greed feels like inside you. And I can't tell you that. You know, I can help you discover it. And, you know, some behavioral practices that I'm big on, like mindfulness and things like that, could help you discover it. But
how much of it is just identifying your own patterns, like the one you mentioned of lining up the screenshot?
Huge.
Like for me, it's when I notice myself pushing take profits to points that are unreasonable. If I see myself doing that, then I know that we're pretty close to the top. I'm already fantasizing about an exponential move that is never going to come.
Yeah. Yeah. Patterns are huge. I mean, that's why, you know, people talk about journaling and how important it is. And I couldn't agree more. The question becomes is what is in your journal and what are you doing with the journal? You know, entries and exits and P&L, you know, cool. Market conditions, cool. But like, what was going on inside your skin when you took that trade? You know, how's life been going the past few days before you took that trade? Like, what is going on in the bigger picture? There is a psychological macro that most traders aren't considering. And that's really big, because your psychological macro is things like, you know, how's my relationship with my husband, wife, whatever? How's life? What's been going on? Am I sick? Right. Am I going through a transition? Am I moving? Whatever. If you're not considering those, you're in trouble, because greed and any sort of impulsive emotion, especially when it's related to behavior that is anesthetizing or helps you avoid, such as trading, because trading is awfully fun. It's a lot more fun than most things. So it's just that you're just that much more, you know, drawn into it, swept away. So if you're not using your journal in a big picture way, if you're not taking those things into account, like the feel scale that I've talked about in other podcast episodes, why are you journaling? You know, you need to understand those patterns, not just whatever, you know, triangles and flags and whatnot, and, you know, rising so wedges.
I think somebody, like, people were nice enough in my journey early on to stress the importance of journaling. So I've always kind of had some form of that throughout the last 5 years or so. It's definitely gotten a lot better than it used to be when I first started. Because like you said, I think it started out with, oh, I need to journal all my trades. Well, I took an entry here. I got stopped out here. I had this many points of heat and I took this much take profit. I wish I would have taken it here. Stuff like that. Like, what good is that? That's not really useful information for me. I've already got that information just by looking through the stats that my broker collects for me. What became more useful information is when I started writing down the things, like you said, like, I saw this, I got really scared, I held on through the trade, even though it was terrifying. This happened, or I felt this emotion. I noticed this emotion and this happened. Those are the things that I think tend to, like you said, like those are when those patterns start to emerge. And when you start writing them down, it starts to become a lot more apparent.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You bring consciousness to it, you know, and you write, and writing is kind of important over typing. You know, I write with a stylus, but it's still writing. You know, I've got a piece of paper sized screen that I'm writing on, and that does help you process. It does help you know, commit to memory. And, you know, like you were saying, the entries and exits and all that stuff, like, great. There's a lot of easy ways to collect that without having to jot it all down, but take down that other stuff, because greed, like all the problematic parts of trading, trading psychology, it puts you in fight or flight. I mean, we get greedy the more we're in fight, flight, or freeze, not so much freeze, but fight or flight, because it's the fight for survival. And then it's get the hell out of here. I took all these villagers' stuff. Let's move, you know?
Oh, I never thought of it that way.
I mean, we've been doing that for, you know, a long time. You know, you put that into trading, it's like, okay, I did pillage the village. My option is blowing up, or my future's, you know, I'm killing this trade. We don't want to, you know, cut it and get the hell out of the village because the villagers are coming for us. We want to like take screenshots and think about Lamborghinis and whatever the hell else we're doing. And, you know, then the villagers come back, but they're called market makers and they kill us. So,
I do like what Harvey threw in the chat there. He calls the things that you were talking about in the journaling existential tilts. Tilts is a good word.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
The greed that I think I feel the strongest is not necessarily like the money of like any particular trade. It's the dream of being able to do this as a career, almost, to where like all the winning trades, like kind of feel like the dream is closer to reality. Oh, you know what I mean? So like, is there a difference between greed and hope, or are those, very similar?
Huge difference. I was going to say, as you were saying that, like, is what tells you that's greed? Like what's going on inside you that you label that as greed currently? Do you know?
I think it's just the potential of what could be if you master this field, I think is kind of like the lines along the what I'm thinking.
Okay. That does sound a little more hope. It's at the very least, it's future oriented thought, right? Your mind's going off into the future. So that's always problematic when trading, when we get too swept up into the future, too swept into the past, because, you know, that the future is, you know, hopium and all that kind of stuff resides there. And, you know, chasing and revenge trading, all that stuff resides in the past. Mm-hmm. So there's one issue, but hope isn't evolutionarily programmed at all.
Okay.
Not at all. because people died when they were 30 until 100 till whatever, how, I don't know how many years ago, 500 years ago. I mean, you know,
world was a lot crueler than it used to be.
The world was way crueler. Yeah. It was, life was way shorter. Fewer people had things. I mean, it was so.
There's a few cities that met the Mongols a thousand years ago that, I could probably agree with that statement.
Right. And hope is a newer development. It's, you know, part of the religious movement and the growth of like monotheistic religions and well, I guess polytheistic too, but that's a later type thing, and it isn't baked in that visceral way that helped you survive. Like, hope doesn't help you survive, because hope is, you know, you could also, in my opinion, hope's the adult version of wishing. It's
almost like
it's a waste of time.
It's like a proactive way of dealing with freeze, almost. Like, you're not going to do anything different. You're just going to sit and hope that it gets better.
Right. And then you're going to, you know, what's going to happen to you while you're hoping. Now, that said, I would not say that to a depressed person. And if you're depressed and you're worried about being told there's no hope, pick up the phone and dial 988. That is the National Suicide Hotline. But anyways, because that is a dangerous idea to float out there. But hope is much more problematic than greed is. Excuse me, it's problematic without the balance that greed has. Greed has the, mm-hmm. you know, the functional side. I don't, you know, hope is good for some things, but it's much more acute. It's much more short term. Greed is a longer term thing. Bigger.
Okay. Thing. Okay. And then actually there was another question I had, because you mentioned the inaction portion of it, like the put you in the fight, flight, or freeze. That is another instance that I find greed affecting me, is when it comes to like a trade that I know I should flatten. like there's that piece of me that's like, but it might still win. It hasn't hit your stop yet. It might still turn around. It might still work. Like, I feel like that's greed, like stopping me from acting as opposed to greed, like encouraging me to act.
That is a that is something to do some work on, because I think there's potential that that's hope as well.
Yeah.
But let's say it's greed. That is like a lot of the things I talked about last time for working with fear. That mm-hmm. is, that applies to this. But the thing that you have to do to differentiate things like this, like, is it hope? Is it greed? Because the interventions are different. Hope is much easier to manage.
Okay.
You could do some grounding.
I was just thinking maybe like the diffusion techniques, like we talked about before. Anytime I notice myself thinking about future or past, like maybe that should be a flag to me that like I should be trying to diffuse myself from those thoughts.
That's right. Because unlike greed, hope is more cognitive, and most, especially pop psychology trash out there, is very cognitively focused, which is very, you know, that's why it doesn't work.
So when you say more cognitive, it's like you're more talking yourself into it as opposed to like reacting.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. It's more thought. It's more, you know, it's from your shoulders up. Greed is more from your shoulders down.
Okay.
And greed's more visceral, and it requires a deeper type of diffusion. You know, I talked about diffusion, you just mentioned diffusion. There's also a concept that kind of goes a little bit beyond diffusion, where through mindfulness practice, the thing you're going to need to do anyways, if you want to get into diffusion and managing yourself, you know, intraday and managing your nervous system, you're going to have to learn this anyways. But there's an observer inside that can do all the things I'm talking about. You know, there's a part of you that's been conscious since the womb, you know, since you came out. There's a reason you cried when you came out of the womb. Your nervous system sent signals and you're like, this blows. It was warm and comfy in there, and now it's cold, and you know, you're not happy. So some part of you observed that. Now, no one really remembers that, but something was observing. Otherwise you wouldn't have that reaction. And we have to get in touch with that observer to manage something like greed. It's harder than fear, even, because fear is way more functional than greed. And like I was saying earlier, to know in your bones, to know in your cell, to know inside your skin when greed comes up is the key. And how do you do that? It's beyond diffusion. It's also knowing that, okay, this urge that I'm feeling, this sickness in my stomach, this nausea, that's greed. And mm-hmm. And as much as I can't make the nausea go away, or I can't, like, I'm going to have this urge to add or whatever, if I can have that observer observing and know that it is greed, you can add more information into that moment, and then you can make better choice. You have more choices, and assuming you could make better, people don't always do it. But the more in the moment you get, the more you add in, the more awareness you pour into, like, oh, wow, I'm feeling, you know, that feeling in my gut. I'm feeling that feeling in my throat, like whatever it is. This is going to have to come through journaling or through, you know, some therapy type work. That's the stuff you got to be looking for. And that's a difficult, to just call it diffusing from that, it's much more difficult. It's seeing, it's understanding that you're just a vessel that these things take place in. Like, so if you think about a stage, what goes on a stage? Plays, concerts, whatever. Let's go with a play.
Okay.
On this stage, a story's taking place. There's characters, there's a protagonist, an antagonist, there's all that stuff. And then, you know, the story could be very emotional, it could be very sad, it could be enraging, it could be funny, it can be whatever. And as you're there observing this play or whatever's going on, you can get lost in that, and you could forget mm-hmm. that you're actually the stage. Then that play ends, the crowd leaves, the backdrop gets taken away, a new backdrop gets put up, a new play is run, you know, let's say these are different phases of your life, and now there's this story running, and it's very easy to get caught up in whatever you're doing. Or maybe the story on the stage is you know, a trading day.
How do you remind yourself that you're an observer, or that you're actually watching the play? Like, how do you remember that you're not you know, in the play, I guess.
The way that I do it is the way I've talked about with the intraday reinforcers, like the behavioral things, like in my Discord, the Skinner alert. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a random reminder. But to answer your question, you remember that because you've done the work, you've done the journaling, like the quality type journaling, you've done the mindfulness practice, you have dealt with your shit, you know, you've dealt with your issues. Like, you know what activates greed inside you. You know, we all of our life's issues activate these kinds of things, and trading activates our life issues. So,
right.
And keep this metaphor in mind. You know, when you can know you're the stage and look up at the play, but you remain, you know, you're the stage, you know, you're this vessel, you know, you're this sack of skin and bones and muscle and viscera and a brain that's going through life. And like, you are not your trading. You are not your car. You are not your house, as much as people get caught up in that bullshit. And that's part of why traders have so much problem. You identify with, you know, outcomes and identify with success or failure or whatever. The more you get trained and you become a practitioner of mindfulness, you become a practitioner of self-awareness, you can just see that stuff going by. If I said this on the last episode, I'm sorry, but you know,
I think it needs to be said again.
I'm about to say.
Oh, okay.
The meditation, it's an old Buddhist thing. Like, you know, you meditate long enough on the riverbank, eventually the bodies of your enemies float by.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that's important to keep in mind.
Right.
You know, we have to be able to sit with ourselves and see our enemies. Now, in this case, it's our life history. It's our issues. It's our problematic habits. It's our greed or whatever you want to call it. And we have to be able to sit back and observe it long enough to know that you are not your greed. You are the stage. You're not the play taking place. The play might all be about greed, and maybe the story of greed, and maybe the story of greedy people. You are not it. You are the thing that the play is taking place upon. And when you can remember that, and the greed comes in intraday, or the FOMO comes in intraday, and you have that kind of self-awareness and that, you know, vitality towards being in touch with the present moment.
Oh, I've seen this show before.
That stuff is no big deal. Exactly. Thank you. Yeah. That's a great way to put it. Seen that show before. You can change the channel. You don't get hooked. You don't have to watch. You don't have to participate. You can go and do something else.
Feels like a good mantra just to keep in mind. I am the stage. I am not whatever's happening right now. That's what's happening upon me.
Exactly.
I like that.
Exactly. And go ahead.
I think I wanted to ask you just about like the strength of it in general. Like, I think I've heard a lot of people talk about fear being 3 times stronger of an emotion than greed. I was just curious if there's any truth to that, or if that's one of those things that gets repeated with no actual.
How the hell does anyone measure that? Who said that? I want names.
I've heard it in many places. They say that's why the markets go down faster than they go up, like things like that. Like, it's not life threatening to have an abundance of stuff. That's one other thing they say.
So greed is 3 times stronger than fear.
The other way around. Fear is 3 times stronger than greed.
Oh, I would disagree. I would say fear is far more acute than greed.
More acute. That's an interesting way of putting it.
And greed is far more chronic.
Okay. Can you explain?
Yeah. The market goes down because fear comes in and people panic, right?
Yeah.
Panic sell or whatever. Start clearing their positions. Fear is better at getting action urges to turn into behaviors, to make the thing you think become real enough that you do something about it.
Gotcha.
So while there's some logic to like, oh, it's stronger than greed, it is not. It is faster. It is scarier, but it's way more acute, you know?
It's more nuanced than just stronger as a reaction.
Way more nuanced.
Different reaction.
Greed is baked in 200,000 years. Now, a form of fear is also baked in, but the form of fear is called worry. And that, you know, that's fear is a type of anxiety. Worry is a type of anxiety. Like, worry is very baked in.
Well, you mentioned the urges a few different times. I don't know if we want to change subjects here, but sure. I've heard you talk a lot about something called urge surfing. Is that something that can maybe could help with like learning to, I guess, maybe recognize the play that's unfolding upon your stage?
Yes, absolutely. Urge surfing is a, again, if you're going to hear this, me always say this word a lot. It's a type of mindfulness. It's applied mindfulness.
Like, is that an effective tool for trying to recognize, to start identifying those patterns? Is that another technique that we can use to help us identify when greed is present?
It is,
or to mitigate when we're in the middle of it.
Yeah, you got it. It is the tool to use after you've identified it, and you've identified it through mindfulness. You've identified it through pattern recognition. You've identified it through your journaling. You've identified it by, being honest with yourself. So then you feel the greed come in, you know what it feels like inside your skin, like I was talking about earlier, then you deploy the urge surf. And the urge surf is what it sounds like. First of all, you got to remember that no emotion has ever lasted forever in the history of mankind. So you got to remind yourself that all emotions and all internal experiences come to an end. Nothing lasts forever. There's usually some kind of like, mantra involved with urge surfing. So you take that mindful pause, you might say to yourself, I'm noticing the urge to take this trade. I'm noticing the urge to add to this trade. I'm noticing the urge to chase this move. We all know when we're chasing.
Yeah.
If you don't, you're lying to yourself. So that point is labeling. Mm-hmm. You're labeling it, much like cognitive diffusion. You're labeling. I'm noticing the urge to act impulsively, whatever context it is. Then you focus on where you feel it in the body.
Okay.
That's what I was getting at before with why it's beyond cognition. It is difficult and it is stronger, in my opinion, due to its chronicity.
Mm-hmm.
Where is it in your body? Is it in your chest? Is it in your throat? In your hands, your face? It'll be different places for different people.
Hands even. I've never heard that or even thought of that.
Definitely.
Very interesting.
A lot of times the manifestation emotionally in your hands is anger, but it can be wherever. I mean, it can be in your
kneecaps. Anger. I never thought of any emotion manifesting in any place other than the chest or head area, I guess. I never really thought that was even a possibility.
Anywhere you got nerves, buddy.
All right. Interesting.
Yeah.
Pay attention to that now.
You're absolutely right that it usually is closer to the vagus nerve, like the big chunk in the center of our chest where the vagus nerve is.
Is that the lizard brain?
The lizard brain is the in the base of your brain. Yeah. The same part of like helps you, breathe and sets off the fire alarm and all that kind of stuff. But anywhere in the vagus nerve, and you're right, it is more likely to manifest close to the vagus nerve. So throat, chest is, stomach, mm-hmm. Stomach's a big one. There is a lot going on in our gut. There's more neural connections in our gut than there is in our brain. So
I think that's just why I assumed everything was there, because that's where I tend to feel most things, I think.
Yeah. Ask someone with anger management issues when their fists start to curl up and they know what it means to feel anger in their hands.
I've noticed tensing of that before.
So locate it in your body is the second step. Where is it? And then it's breathing into it. It's deep intentional breaths. You kind of imagine yourself breathing into that area of your body and creating space for it.
I think, do you have a guided meditation on this or a mindfulness session that I think I'd listen to? Cause this sounds very familiar. I think we did an exercise one point that we did something along those lines, but I think the most impactful part of it for me was what comes afterwards and you talked about the mantra. I think this might be what you're leaning into towards that, but the idea that I don't have to act on the urges, that made me feel very powerful in the moment. It made it feel way different than when you're just thinking of those urges and you're reacting to them. That's just the knowing the knowledge and saying out to myself, like, I don't have to act on this. Exactly. Felt like I was taking power back.
It's a great point. That's one of my favorite mindfulness exercises. I think it really it operationalizes mindfulness for people. It makes it real versus just this intellectual concept. That exercise is on my website under Mindfulness for Traders. You can just download it or listen to it on the site. But
make a note, I'll make sure I link it actually.
Yeah. So and that ties into what I'm saying. So, you know, locating your body, breathing into it, and then, you know, I'm literally imagining the wave like building up, cresting, falling down. This is where you bring in, then you bring in visualization. You know, I know a lot of traders that are big on visualization. There are some really good applications of visualization. There's some applications that are a waste of time. This is not a waste of time. And then the last part is, you know, refocus on the plan, what was going on before the urge came in. So you have to have a good relationship with that too. You've got to have a plan in for the day, whether, you know, it's your trading plan. For me, it's the trading plan and the trading psychology plan, the four steps we've talked so much about. You know, those things need to be in place. Those tools make all this stuff much more doable. And, you know, that explanation I just gave, that can take place in 15 seconds in your head. That can take place in 5 seconds. It can also be 30 minutes, if depending on how strong the urge is. So, you know, it doesn't always have to be this long, complicated thing. It just becomes a, you know, the result of self-awareness and a willingness to take care of yourself so you can accomplish things you want to accomplish with trading.
I know it's only 2 episodes into it, but I'm getting the idea that maybe I might have cracked a code here or a key here, but it seems like the majority of what we're doing here is really just acknowledging that these things are happening. Like, how much of it is just not hiding from it?
It is huge. You know, humans are avoidant animals, and, you know, we have the ability to avoid our experiences like no other animal out there.
I'm so good at it.
Our prefrontal cortex, we're very good at it. Yeah. And you're definitely onto something, and we should, you know, revisit that, because when you do that, you have the opportunity to change your relationship with what's going on. That creates more choices. More choices creates that freedom that we all talk about, you know, financial freedom, yada, yada. How about psychological freedom?
God, I know, right? Isn't that the dream? I think, Sean, that's like a great point to probably open things up for questions here, unless you have anything else you want to say on greed before I let people type some stuff in.
Question away if we got them.
Ready to nerd out on the tech shaping tomorrow? Voices of Blockchain, the official podcast of Boston Blockchain Week 2025, is back for season 2. We're featuring pioneers rocking Web3, AI, and blockchain innovation. So get the scoop on the people powering the next wave of innovation by subscribing now wherever you get your podcasts. And join us for the fun in September at bostonblockchainweek.com for the killer talks, epic vibes, and top-tier networking. And if you happen to run into me or my wife, come see us, because we'll probably have unused drink tickets.
Eric, why should people listen to season 2?
I'm really excited for season 2, because what's interesting is that we talked about the founding of America. You know, we set that foundation. And now we're going to watch America try and build a house that will become divided and burned down.
And, we're going to watch them fail spectacularly.
Yeah, we're going to watch them fail spectacularly. It's going to end with the nation ripping itself apart, the founding of the best Virginia, and, you know, the suspending of habeas corpus. about as Boston getting. But what's going to be cool is what emerges from season 2 is the foundation for the world's largest, most advanced economy.
You visit the website, buckstartsherepodcast.com, to stay up to date. We'll see you all next week. Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. The email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
All right. Harvey has one on here. He's asking about when it comes to greed, hope versus greed. Does that kind of fall into like the difference between wants versus needs maybe?
That's a good analogy. Wants versus need and greed versus hope. Yeah, I mean, in the sense that I think hope's a lot more optional, you know, and so, you know, wants are optional, needs are not. Greed isn't, you're never going to get rid of greed. You can't not be greedy, and you don't want to not be greedy. You have to, right. You have to take care of yourself. Taking care of yourself is taking care of your family. Putting yourself first is, you know, there's the narcissism and all that kind of crap, but generally speaking, it is making, you know, taking care of yourself and the people you love, and that requires greed. So yes, want versus needs, a really interesting point, Harvey. I like that.
I had to explore that one a little bit more.
Yeah.
Let's see this one. When it comes to greed, like where would you, what side of the emotion wheel would that be on? Would that be on the uncomfortable side or the comfortable side? Because I don't think I saw it listed on the one that I downloaded the other day.
That is correct. It is not on there. If I had to, I would throw it on the comfortable side, and that's part of the problem with it. That's part of what's so complicated. It's 200,000 years. It is natural. I mean, look at it, you know, just look at kids play. You know, you see greed manifesting, right?
Yeah.
Take kids' toy away, the you know, the upset. It is baked in. It is deep. And I don't have it on the emotion wheel. The emotion wheel that I use is, you know, from a source where there's some, you know, data behind it or whatever. But it's not on there because I wouldn't really call greed an emotion. You know, it's a state. You know, it's an action urge, largely. I mean, greed is taking action, is doing something. It is preventing loss. It's preventing losing something. It is gaining something that one perceives they need or one perceives they want. So it's beyond just an emotion.
It's not just an emotion, yeah.
Okay. I don't think so.
I have a hard time disagreeing with that, so I'll let you have that one. Greed for the dopamine rush of .. yeah. let's see what other questions I got in here. MDO Mans, I don't know if that's the way you say that. Mondo Mans. He wanted to know if you could explain like what greed is actually. Is it some form of fear? And I actually asked him for a little bit more clarification. So the example he gave was how like he wants to win more to cover the next loss that he thinks he might take, like in that line of thinking. So that where fear is like the underlying motivator for his greed.
I think anxiety is more his issue based on what you just said, based on what he said.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so he was talking about that it comes up when he's thinking about the next thing or whatever.
Yeah.
When he's the next trade. So his mind is off in the future. He's not in the present.
We just talked right. about that.
Right. Yeah. So he's out in the future. There's anxiety manifesting, and his question to begin with is, it, you know, more than just fear. So he's assuming that it's a fear thing. It is not necessarily a fear thing. It can be tied to fear. It can be amplified by fear, but fear doesn't have to have anything to do with greed.
Right.
You can be very not fearful and have a lot of greed.
It sounds like he might have found something though, that one of those patterns he may need to write down if he's exactly. starting to worry about the next trade. Yeah,
exactly. And he's a very systematic trader from what I've gathered. I don't know him that well, but so that's going to be really important for him is systematically documenting in a better way to differentiate those things, tease those things out. So he knows for him, fear can activate greed because remember greed creates safety. Mm-hmm. Those biologically those anthropologically programmed things that I'm talking about. They ultimately are to create safety and to survive. So fear is kicking in and activating his threat brain, and he resolves his threat mind with greed, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
He's got to look for that pattern.
Yeah.
They're good. These are really good questions, because these Q&As that are, you know, where you can't interact with the person, or it's just these, you get these general answers, don't really apply to people. And it's best if people can give those details and you can tease those out so they get the answer for them versus the answer for, you know, Stickmaster 420, who has 50,000 followers on Twitter. That's just his life that he knows about and manages psychology.
Speed Skater Girl is asking here, where does greed diverge from the need to be right? That's an interesting question.
So you say, where do they diverge? Where? Tell me how they're connected first.
So she's not sure she can know the difference between them. Hmm. Where does greed diverge from the need to be right?
The need to be right is greed, you're saying. That's interesting.
See, I feel the need to be right for me is more tied to shame.
Yeah, I'm still not seeing the need to be right and greed. So I don't know where I feel greed. I don't see the connection right exactly. The need for, where does greed diverge from need to be right? Not sure I can know the difference between them. Everything is always a need to be right for me. So I don't know where I feel greed. I don't know that that's a greed issue. So generally speaking, and I'm saying that because I don't know if this applies to you or not, but generally speaking, the need to be right is more about a sense of self. So lawyers are kind of like a common example, right? People who need to be right. I mean, they argue for a living. When you need to be right, the one common thing is underdeveloped sense of self. So if you argue with someone, or if you are correcting someone, there's no moment in time where you are more differentiated from the other human being. They are them. I am me. My identity is established. So if I don't have a strong identity, that creates it. You know, where that issue comes from is varies, but it's usually just from like really strong personality parents, or sometimes it's from neglect. Sometimes it can be from cold parents. And then the other piece of that thing is what you were getting at, Kyle, like it could be a shame thing where there's some kind of insecurity. There's some kind of, you know, I have shame about whatever it might be. This is where the work comes in. And in order to temporarily get rid of that sense of shame, I win each battle, or I have the last word, or whatever it might be. And that it, you know, we talk about dopamine hits all the time. It's a dopamine hit. Now, I think that shit's a serious oversimplification, all this dopamine talk that we have out in trait psychology now, because everything's a fucking dopamine hit.
Yeah, right.
For God's sakes. It's just absurd to get focused on that, because, you know, you're not going to like get rid of that issue by managing your dopamine. You're going to get rid of the issue by developing a sense of self or working on the shame. And that, all that said, it could be something else that causes that, but I don't know that it's greed. And actually, as I'm saying it out loud, the question confabulating them might speak to what their need to be right is about.
Can I share a secret and tell you what mine is, where I think it stems from?
Sure.
So I think it was sixth grade. I was on the Geography Bowl team, and we actually went on the news. They showed a clip of ours. We won. The question they chose to show was the still remember the question, is which continent is also a desert? I rang in. I got the question right. It was Antarctica. And the clip that they showed, they didn't show the answer being right. They just showed it stop right there, and the news anchor go, so close.
Oh, sons of bitches.
Motherfuckers. I don't think I've ever quite gotten over that one.
That's brutal.
Right?
Yeah, and so if the next night they ran the clip and they're like, oh, we messed up and we did this, what do you think that would have accomplished for you? What would that have done?
Probably would have made me feel a lot better, or at least some sense of justice.
Right. Do you know why?
Closure. Because I got something to at least acknowledge that the mistake was made.
That's the word. You got acknowledged. We all want to be acknowledged. And the reasons we want to be acknowledged, so universally we do. You know, I know there's hermits out there and stuff, but they're anomalies.
I am a hermit, but I still like being acknowledged.
Of course, you know,
we all do.
Yeah,
it feels good.
Exactly.
Dopamine.
We need validation. It's one of the, it is dopamine, and it's healthy dopamine. And, you know, there's a reason kids are like, mommy, look what I did.
Mm-hmm.
We are seeking that from the get-go and we don't stop. But if we don't have certain needs met, it gets out of hand and interferes and creates problems. And that mm-hmm. validation seeking, you know, you see that in trading of the, all the time. Just look into it. You see the validation seeking and all that. And, you know, that is what it is. It, you know, some of it is just not being a normal person, and some of it is having a serious being seriously deprived of it and trying to get it through tweets and probably lying on tweets.
Right. Oh God. Yeah. How many of those accounts do you think are even real?
I don't know anymore.
Let's see. Do I have any more good questions in here? You guys got anything else? I think I got one more here. The difference between confidence and greed in trading. I don't have anything more than just that.
Difference between confidence and greed.
Like sometimes I guess the two can feel, I guess the overconfidence maybe gets kind of conflated with greed sometimes.
Yeah, I think that question speaks to a different problem. I think, and I don't know who asked the question. No disrespect. I think
there's no name on this one.
Yeah. Okay. I think that question more speaks to a lack of emotional intelligence or a lack of self-awareness. Because they're really, you know, they're kind of apples and oranges. Actually, before I totally shit on that, let me think about that for a second. But confidence and greed, I mean, confidence comes from developing a sense of agency, a sense of mastery. You know,
yeah, they've
done things,
be.
There's repetition, there's a behavioral component of I have done something. For true confidence, there's overcompensation, which is just like covering up for shame. But actual confidence, I don't know how, I don't know where it would overlap with greed. If you're confident,
I don't
you
think it does now.
I don't really get the question.
Yeah. Maybe we skip that one.
Yeah. I do think it's a EQ, more of an EQ thing. A lot of traders.
I think you're right. Because like confidence, like you said, like it stems from like having stuff to back everything up. If you don't have anything to back up your confidence, then maybe that's the difference.
Yeah. Confidence isn't going to make you overtrade.
Right.
Because if you have confidence, you're going to wait for the trade. If you have confidence, you're going to end your day and know you can make money tomorrow.
Oh, maybe people just don't know what confidence is.
I think that might be a thing. And I mean, I might even be conflating competence a little bit, but greed and confidence, I'm not seeing that.
Yeah. I guess you could be confident, but also wrong.
I think they're talking like cocky.
Yeah.
You know, right. Cocky. Yeah, and yeah. You know, maybe that gets in, maybe that can be.
But see, then even confidence gets kind of a negative connotation almost in that instance. Whereas that should be something we're kind of striving for.
Yeah, confidence is very, very healthy. Confidence makes us, you know, better traders, because it doesn't mean we trade more or whatever. It just means we have, you know, we feel good about our decisions. We make decisions, you know, we can make them quickly.
And I think that question actually ended up being better than I thought it was going to be.
It's helpful for trading. Yeah, it's interesting. An interesting thing that I've always come across it, and this might be because now that I'm working with so many traders, I work with more men than I ever have in my career. And I really come across people that do not know what emotions they're feeling, you know, where they are in their body, you know, what they're called. People like will use like the word anxiety, but they're talking about depression the whole time. I can't really stress enough to people, just go on Google and click emotion wheel and print it out and look at it every day and ask yourself what you're feeling. Or there's these ones that have like little faces that go along with them. They may seem really corny, but I'll tell you, whenever I've had a brick and mortar therapy practice, I've had a laminated version of an emotion wheel. And on the other side was all those little faces with the emotions next to them. And I can't tell you how many times, you know, I point to it on the table and say, take a look and tell me what you're feeling, you know, because they really can't identify. And it'll serve you so well in your trading if you get better at that.
Not just your trading.
Your relationship, your life.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that is a good note to end things on. So please join me in thanking Sean for taking the time out this lovely evening to record this with us, answer all our questions. Thank you guys in the live audience for joining us and all the amazing questions you guys submitted. If anybody has questions they want for the next one they want to send us, they could do that by email or they can do that via the Discord. If you want to join and participate in these, just shoot me or Sean a message on Twitter, LinkedIn, Discord, wherever you find us. I mean, we're on pretty much everything. We'll get you in there. Just make sure that you're liking, subscribing, and sharing everything. We'll be back soon with more emotions to scrutinize, but till that day, like, share, subscribe, everything. Have a green week.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only, does not constitute financial or investment advice, and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations.
Produced by China Shop Productions.